to Europe now, and our correspondent Seamus Cooney. Welcome. You're in Lyon. Thank you for your time.
Hello, Catherine. Good to talk to you.
A lot is happening right as the G7 meets. There is a fresh attack on Ukraine's capital, Seamus.
Yes, and, you know, Ukraine today really describing this as provocation on the part of Russia. These attacks, not only across the country, but also in Kyiv, the capital. And this is the first time in weeks, actually, one person killed, at least one person, half a dozen others wounded. And, of course, this happening this weekend when we have the G7 leaders meeting in Germany and southern Germany to discuss the impact of President Putin's invasion. So Ukraine really describing this as provocation as those world leaders meet. Actually hit by these strikes today, a kindergarten and a housing block. President Biden, who's at the summit, slamming those missile strikes as more of their barbarism, to use his words, to quote him there. And as I say, these missile strikes really have been stepped up right across the country. And I think, you know, one of the key messages we heard there today was from UK's Boris Johnson, saying the West must remain united against Russia. This, of course, you will have heard in the news, this key eastern city now fallen into Russian hands. This is Severodonetsk. The troops, Ukrainian troops, withdrew there on Saturday, actually saying that the city is so bombarded, it's just completely in ruins. There's nothing actually now left to defend there. So that's a major blow for Ukraine. They're really trying to keep control of these two eastern provinces. So that's Luhansk and Donetsk that form the Donbass region. And we now hear from some Russian news agencies saying that Russian forces are now advancing on a city called Lysychansk, which actually is the last major city held by Ukraine in the Luhansk region as well. So bad news from there. But Boris Johnson saying that, you know, we must stay united. President Biden echoing that as well. And at the same time, we hear that President Putin, for example, announcing his first foreign trip since launching the war. So he's going to two ex-Soviet states. Of course, he's under sanctions, so he can't go too far, but he's due to make a visit to Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. All of this happening as well. You know, we know that last week Ukraine welcoming the European Union's decision, for example, to give it candidate status. So we've got movements on both sides. Russia really, trying to still put across its defense. We had the foreign minister there giving an interview to the BBC, for example. So they're wanting to remain active in terms of the media on the world stage, but of course those sanctions making that very, very difficult. Don't forget, we have the G7 summit at the moment, and then in a couple of days' time on Wednesday, we have the NATO summit taking place as well. So all of these world leaders are going to be discussing the conflict also in Madrid at the NATO summit in Spain. I think also New Zealand's Prime Minister invited there as well. Lots of demonstrators, actually, in Madrid I saw there today, anti-NATO demonstrators calling for peace. But at the NATO summit, that's where we're going to hear also about whether Finland and Sweden will be able to join NATO. Of course, they put their applications in after the Russian invasion.
Yes, it's an interesting topic of discussion here. As to whether New Zealand is inching towards some kind of, if not formal, then informal symbolic gesture with respect to NATO. And of course that is interesting given our fairly, well, typically neutral stance in these matters, but there are many shifting tides at the moment. I was interested in reading about the current G7, however, and this question of what to do to use oil as a sanction. And I was noting there's been some talk about introducing price caps, which might undermine the agreement already to pretty much phase out the use of oil. There's some really complicated discussions to happen here if the pressure is to be kept on, Seamus.
That's right. And you talked there about the cap on prices. So that's been introduced at the summit. So this would be a cap on prices that countries in Europe, for example, pay for Russian oil and also for pipeline gas. No agreement on that yet. And also it's difficult to understand how that would work. I think there's this feeling that if there is a collective cap on the prices, Russia is going to have no choice but to actually pay what's being demanded. With the reduction and with the bans we have now on Russian oil and gas, some countries just, you know, completely turning off the taps. Russia also turning off the taps. It has to be said that, you know, they won't totally turn off their gas. And so this is where this idea of the cap on the prices comes in. But as I say, this has been floated. There's a lot of discussion to be had, and I don't think we're likely to get a conclusion on that at the summit. But also, Catherine, another measure that's actually been proposed at the summit is a ban on Russian gold imports. So that's being put across by countries like the US, the UK. But the latest word we had tonight, we don't see a lot of enthusiasm support for that from Europe, for example. So this is very complex. Obviously, there's a lot to, you know, it's very complex, this whole issue of, gold imports, how that would work. And I think these are being floated, but I think these are ideas to be discussed in the months to come.
Can we just talk about France? Because the parliamentary results came through just after our segment last week, and it's bad news for the French president, really. What is he doing now to try and get together some kind of a support for his domestic reform agenda?
It was absolutely bad news for him, and it's interesting to see him at the G7, the smile on his face as he meets all these world leaders, but he has an absolute headache at home, and really now he's trying to salvage any nuance of a domestic reform agenda, including, you know, the retirement age. He had lots and lots of plans. Then, you know, the sting of losing this absolute majority in Parliament, the recent elections, we talked about that briefly a couple of weeks ago. So he is 40 seats short of an absolute majority. So in his first term, he enjoyed a majority. He was able to push through quite a few changes and reforms. But this will be an absolute sting for him. He's now got to look around to the other parties in Parliament for support. And this absolutely rare moment, I mean, this was staggering for me. We had Macron holding face-to-face talks in the president's Élysée Palace with the far-right leader, Marine Le Pen, holding talks, in fact, with all the parliamentary groups, all of the leaders of the parliamentary groups. Now, if you said that to me 5 years ago, they would have a president in the Élysée holding face-to-face talks with the leader of the far right. I would have said, you know, that's completely unlikely, but there we go. And, you know, the far right, absolutely an historic advance in those elections, so scoring close to 90 seats, I should say. So a massive increase in their presence in Parliament. Interesting, because the president, just before these legislative elections, actually brought in a new government with a new prime minister. So that was after he was re-elected in those elections in April and May. Well, now, this weekend, he's actually reconfirmed his confidence in his new prime minister. That's somebody by the name of Elizabeth Borne, refusing, in fact, to actually accept her resignation after that very poor election result. So now she's been called on to hold further talks in the coming days and weeks with the different parliamentary groups to try to form what Macron is now calling a government of action, because he says, you know, this is an absolute stalemate. If we don't reach agreement, there's no compromise. If we don't cooperate, nothing can be achieved. And, you know, the news tonight, Catherine, we just saw a couple of reactions from some of those groups. So far, the main parliamentary groups, so that's the leftist alliance of parties, also the traditional right-wing party, no indication so far that they're willing to compromise or to cooperate with Macron. So quite a tough job he has on his hands with his prime minister.
Now, Norway is in shock after a shooting rampage. This happened on Pride Day. Of course, it's got its history already to grapple with, hasn't it? Its recent history. What has happened this time?
Yeah, and this is terrible. You know, last year was the 10th anniversary, wasn't it, of that terrible attack in 2011, 77 people killed by Anders Breivik, the far-right anti-Muslim extremist. Well, here now, yes, this was two people killed, more than 20 injured, 10 in a serious condition. This gunman opening fire at a gay bar and another venue, just as the city was gearing up for its annual Pride parade. So the police there treating this really as an act of terrorism, as an act of Islamist terrorism. And actually today, Catherine, we had members of Norway's royal family and the government turning up to a memorial service in Oslo for victims of that shooting rampage. This is a 42-year-old man of Iranian origin, arrested. He's now charged with murder, attempted murder, also acts of terrorism. The police saying that he had had a history of mental illness, of Islamist radicalization. In fact, some of the reports this weekend saying that he was known to the intelligence services since 2015, actually even questioned in May of this year. But the police deciding that actually there was no real threat, and so he wasn't taken into custody. So he's now being questioned. And at this service today, members of the royal family, as I say, also Norway's prime minister speaking and saying that the shooting rampage absolutely not going to stop the country's fight against prejudice, to use the words of the prime minister, also hate. And really the right for everybody in Norway to live a free and safe life. So absolutely terrible scenes there in Norway.
Thank you very much, Seamus Cooney, our correspondent in Lyon.